52 points for Ja Morant, including maybe the dunk of the season for the Grizzlies, plus potential Eastern Conference Finals preview. Markelle Fultz returns, big night, and lots to talk about on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What up, everybody, and happy Tuesday. Welcome into another edition of the Locked On NBA Podcast. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, filling in for Matt Moore today, and he's David Ramil, host of Locked On Heat. David, how you doing, man?
Hanging in there. Excited to talk basketball after a packed Monday evening filled with seven games on the slate, so some good adventures to get into. Let's talk about those.
A fascinating seven-game slate where Ja Morant completely stole the show, highlight play after highlight play on his way to a ho-hum 52 for the Grizzlies. The Heat played the Bulls, two teams atop the East. The Raptors and Nets are always a fun battle. Markelle Fultz returned to action. The last year's champs played. Storylines all over the place, but Ja Morant deserves our lead and attention today. First of all, poor Jakob Poeltl got completely yammed on in what I would consider the dunk of the season by Ja Morant in this game. It was absolutely ridiculous. The man flew and just completely dunked on him. And then at the halftime buzzer, Ja Morant catches the ball jumping and flying out of bounds and just flings it up volleyball style, somehow makes the buzzer beater. Highlight after highlight, it was that kind of night for Morant. Everything went his way. 22 for 30, hit all of his threes, seven rebounds, two assists, 52 points for Ja Morant, completely cooking the Spurs in a 118-105 win for the Grizzlies. What an unbelievably special night for Morant, David.
Yeah, I feel like he's gotten so much attention, you know, with the All-Star game and everything else, and it feels like it just continues to build. Like, more and more people are just starting to realize what an exciting young player Morant is, and he is appointment viewing at this point. I mean, it feels like almost every game you're going to tune in and see a huge performance from Morant, and deservedly so. Like, he's proving to be one of the greats of today's game as a young player. Like, he's next in line as far as that next tier of up and coming stars there. And it's exciting to watch him perform at this level. But I'm kind of going to rain on everybody's Grizzlies parade, because they've been really, really good. And I've been singing their praises pretty repeatedly over the course of the season. But I more I watch them, the more I think they may not have stakes for sustainable playoff success. And I know a lot of people could say, well, that's the Western Conference, or, you know, they're going to go up against a tougher team, perhaps a more experienced team. And I think experience does count for something, and they just don't have enough of it on their roster. And these kind of teams where they're built around these kind of singular talents like Morant's tend to not usually have that kind of sustainable success in the playoffs. Am I crazy here? Is it worth even talking about, or should we just be all on the hype parade regarding Ja's big night?
A little of both. We don't have to sports center it. You know, we could go full galaxy brain of like, when can he get to the Lakers? But I don't want to do that either. You know, I think it's easy to do what you just said. You look at the rest of the Grizzlies starters in this game at 18 combined points, right? Like, there will be a point in the playoffs where teams go under Ja Morant screens and scheme for him perfectly, and the Grizzlies are a little easier to beat than they are in the regular season, when you're playing a different game every other night, sure. But sometimes that doesn't matter. I covered the Victor Oladipo team that almost beat LeBron James in the playoffs because Vic was that dude for an entire series, and they had no one else with them. And the Grizzlies are way more talented than that Pacers team, and Ja Morant's better than Victor Oladipo was that season. Like, I think they can win a round and make some noise in the playoffs, especially when this dude can just casually ho-hum 52 points on 30 shots against Greg Popovich, who hates to see this kind of stuff happen against him. And he didn't even have to do that much passing the ball. Certainly not the greatest stats outside of scoring, but 52 points with those kind of highlights, again, against a well-coached team like the Spurs. I get what you're saying. You know, the rest of their team doesn't have the punch or the oomph or the consistency to really scare any of the title contenders, I think. Yeah. But I definitely think they're good enough to win in the playoffs and make some noise.
It just feels like, look, earlier in the season when he was hurt, it felt like their offense evolved into a much more egalitarian, sharing offense. You saw big gains from Jaren Jackson Jr. You saw Desmond Bane shoot like 40% from three. And those numbers have all dropped for everybody else once Ja comes back. And I know that's just, you know, that's just the way it's going to work out in the NBA when you have a go-to talent who can just attack. But it kind of feels like, you know, Allen Iverson back in the day or something like that, where he was just going to put up big points. And then you look around and say, who's next in line? Who can step up? And I know the comparison between Morant and Iverson has been made before, but it just kind of feels like that's the nature of how the team is playing out. And yes, Iverson at one point was able to go all the way to the NBA Finals. I just don't know that this version of this Grizzlies team is there yet. And, I just have some concerns, but look, none of that matters, at least for tonight on a Tuesday or Monday night when we're recording this. Ja Morant is a fantastic player with a huge, incredible performance against the San Antonio Spurs. And maybe that should be the only thing that we're talking about.
Well, hey, the Spurs also played this game. Very Popovich-like. Okay, six guys in double figures, all sharing the ball very well. But, when you can't stop Ja Morant, it doesn't really matter. And you don't get a lot of attention in games like this. If you're the Spurs, Popovich still two away from breaking the coaching wins record after another loss. Let's move to another fun-ish game in the West that was a very exciting finish. I guess it was an East game featuring a Western Conference team. Minnesota-Cleveland, a very back-and-forth affair down the stretch. Tons of offense in the fourth. Cavs climb all the way back, get it within one with a minute to go before the Wolves hold on to win. It's actually tied with 33 seconds to go after a huge Chetty Osman three. But the Wolves beat the Cavs 127-122. Anthony Edwards had what would have maybe been the dunk of the year if Ja Morant didn't do something similar on the same night where he switched hands midair to dunk against the Cavs. Anthony Edwards does this stuff all the time as well. D'Angelo Russell was excellent for Minnesota with 25. Torian Prince gave him 15 off the bench. They got good contributions from all their normal stars. The Cavs didn't have Darius Garland or Caris LeVert, so it's impressive they were able to hang around in this game. But, Minnesota just keeps banking these wins and making me think they are potentially getting close to a lock to get out of that play-in tournament in the West. What do you think about the Wolves, Dave? David?
I mean, look, they've been very good at times. I just, if you're going to have concerns about, teams pretty consistently, like Memphis has been much better throughout this regular season. Minnesota, like their defense is really good. They have these nights where they can outscore the other team just enough to pull away a victory here. They've got some great young talent. I think they're even less prepared for the playoffs, but at the same time, maybe that doesn't matter. Look, they're just looking to make it. Like this Minnesota team that's barely been in the postseason over the last, 16, 17 seasons. I mean, only one postseason trip during that span. Not great. And so that's enough. They're fun to watch. Not exactly dangerous, but again, maybe I'm just being a downer today. I don't know. I'm trying to look at, I'm looking at like realistic teams here. And I do this with Matt all the time. It's like you look at these teams and maybe, I'm focusing on the negative here, but I think that's worth pointing out sometimes because you get caught up in the hype about these teams. And maybe for like fans of, Wolves fans, they're so excited about the chance of being a first round exit. And that's, that's something to hang your hat on. But I don't know. Is that really all you're playing for at 33-29, four games over 500? I guess, you're better than you've been in years past, but that bar has been so low for so long that I don't know if it really stands out as something you want to brag about or talk about. But anyway, look, the Wolves are fun. They're a great team. They're fun. Let's
focus on that. I'm just going to mute you and yell about dunks for the rest of the show. How's that
sound? That sounds great. I mean,
yeah, your night's over. Your shift's done. Go watch whatever game you want to watch. Jared Allen, the all-star, 9-for-10 for 21 points for him. He continues to shine no matter who's in a guard for the Cavs. Kevin Love against the Timberwolves nonetheless. 26 points for the former five-time all-star. Huge night. He's been awesome for this Cavs team. This is a fun game. When you think about the Cavs and the Timberwolves, I don't want to equate the two players in terms of impact or who they are as people at all, but just Patrick Beverley and Kevin Love are the examples of like why sometimes a vet can be so important to young teams. Just someone who can keep all those guys together on the same page and give them that little kick in the pants when things are going wrong. And Beverley played very well for the Timberwolves in this game. Chetty Osman had a nice 21 off the bench for the Cavs and, again, hit the big shot that tied this game up. But the Wolves get it done. They still have a great record when when D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns play together, which could make them dangerous come playoff time. But, who knows what that team will shake out to be. We haven't even talked about the biggest game of the night yet, though, David. And I think before we get there, you got to tell us about something.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, football might be over for the season, but basketball is clearly in full steam for both pro and college hoops. From all the latest odds, totals, player performances, props, to where the next fired coach is going to land, BetOnline.net is the number one spot for all of your sports betting needs. BetOnline remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline.net is your source for hockey, boxing, and UFC odds. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. Bet online, where the game starts.
Eastern Conference Finals preview action. Bulls Heat, always fun when these two teams go off against each other, separated by just a game or so in the standings. And I would start and tell you what happened in this game, but David's one of the hosts of Lockdown Heat. David, talk about this game and the Heat smothering the Bulls to less than 100 points.
Yeah, that's basically it. They kept the second best three-point shooting team in the league to just 24% shooting from the perimeter. They hounded DeMar DeRozan all night. It was PJ Tucker, Jimmy Butler, a little bit of Caleb Martin on occasion too. Just a variety of wing players that were able to keep DeRozan from his continuing streak of 30 points plus per game. You know, he looked pretty pedestrian at times. He was not their leading scorer. He finished with 18 points on a solid 7 of 16 shooting, but he wasn't able to get to the line. He wasn't able to hit the occasional three, wasn't dominating in the fourth quarter as he has so often throughout the regular season, and that was really the difference. It was all about Miami's defense. They got some big performances offensively from Gabe Vincent. I don't know if a lot of people know who Gabe actually is, but he stepped in for Kyle Lowry, who missed, unfortunately, yet another game due to personal reasons. So he was out of the lineup, and Vincent stepped up and had a big game. 20 points for him, along with 20 points from Tyler Hero. They got another big game from Bam Adebayo, who continues to be very aggressive of late. 15 points from him offensively, and incredible defense all the way around. Just look, I've tweeted this out earlier from my account. You can follow me at DRamil13 if you want to. But also, just like, Bam has been so fun to watch. Like, covering the Heat, and you see what Bam Adebayo does. And so often the discussion is about, oh, he's not really an all-star. He puts up these bad numbers. Lately, he's been putting up big numbers offensively. But just what he does defensively is so good. And I am personally starting the bandwagon on Bam's Defensive Player of the Year campaign, because while he did miss a number of games in December while he had surgery on his right thumb, he has been absolutely phenomenal, and he continues to show it. Being able to guard 1 through 5 with ease, he's so important to what they do defensively, and they have such a great defensive cohesion. And they really kind of made the Chicago Bulls look very mediocre tonight. And I know they were without Lonzo Ball or Alex Caruso, who would certainly have done a very good job defensively and gotten a key bucket here and there to stay on pace. But this game wasn't even as close as it looked. A lot of these points came in the fourth quarter when Chicago had like a 10-0 run towards the end of the game. The Heat were up by as many as 24 at one point, and so they looked absolutely dominant. And I think they have kind of shown themselves that they're certainly better than Chicago, at least during the regular season. I think that they have proven this game might be the one that proves that they are legitimate contenders, because a lot of people see the talent disparity maybe with a team like Philadelphia or Brooklyn, and they kind of discount what Miami's been able to do because they just don't have that same star power as an Adetokounmpo or a Harden or Embiid, et cetera. But they play pretty good as a team. They've got a lot of depth, a lot of different players that can step up on any given night, and I think that's obviously their greatest strength.
I have to do my job as a host as the distributor of highlights from this evening, because Bam was covering Kobe White in the pick and roll, and Kobe White threw a lob to a wide open Nikola Vucevic, and Bam somehow recovered 20 feet from the basket, ran down and blocked the dunk after covering the guy who threw the lob. It was maybe the best block I've seen in a while. It was a lot of crazy, like, wow, I haven't seen something like that in a long time kind of nights in the NBA. But that kind of, to your point about Bam being the Defensive Player of the Year, talks about all the stuff he can do so well. He can contain the ball handlers in the pick and roll and recover back to his man, defends the post so well, just such a solid, versatile defender, such a solid threat on offense now as well that he's added just a little bit of a shot. It's still not like the most refined thing ever, but just such a valuable and a well-rounded player for this Heat team. And, you know, when they can slow down DeRozan, not only to be, what was his mark, 35 for a bunch of games in a row and shooting over 50%, and they hold him to 18, you know, very impressive game for the Heat, who sixth best defensive rating in the NBA right now before this game, third in the East behind the Celtics and Cavs. And look, I don't want to belittle either of those teams, but in the playoffs, I'm buying the Heat's defense over both of those teams. It seems like their defense is going to be something they can hang their hat on come playoff time. And do they need to meet the Bulls in a series potentially? Maybe who knows what round that would be, but it seems like something they could use to get by Chicago in a series, because they've been able to beat them a few times this season thanks to that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're 3-0 against the Bulls this year.
I didn't even realize it was 3-0. I remember one other game, but I couldn't remember all three. Yeah, LaVine had 22 versus Chicago. He was scoring not inside the arc, at least at a decent clip, but really no one else gave the Bulls what they need. I would assume Mook continues to be awesome as a rookie, but they needed someone to really step up and give them a push, and they didn't get it. But that, again, is a testament to that Miami Heat defense as we lose David here. So I'll just continue on. Raptors-Nets was another fun story-filled game in the East. You know, the Nets playing without Kyrie Irving is always fascinating. They have no stars at the time without Kyrie and Kevin Durant and James Harden playing. So it's always tough uphill games for them, and the Raptors right close to them in the standings. A chance for the Nets to catch up in that play-in race in the Eastern Conference, see where they could potentially end up. And Scottie Barnes stole the show. Didn't miss a shot in the first half as the Raptors cruise in this game. David, welcome back. Raptors cruise in this game past the Brooklyn Nets. 133-97, dominated them in that play-in race, getting a little farther as Brooklyn. You know, what a weird season they've had. But Scottie Barnes, a rookie, 28-16, plus 4 assists, 5 steals, and a block. That's one of those nights that flies you up the Rookie of the Year standings. He was excellent, excellent on a night that really – no Fred VanVleet, not many Raptors had awesome games except for Scottie Barnes. And look, the Nets had no stars. The Raptors were the more talented team playing. But to be led by a rookie like this is so rare. And the Raptors just keep doing this. They turn these guys into immediate contributors so fast. Their development is so impressive.
Yeah. Does he have a chance at Rookie of the Year, in your opinion?
I think he has a chance. You know, Mobley, I feel so bad for Evan Mobley because he is so good. But the stuff he's good at is like so boring, if that makes any sense, in terms of like absolutely how you cover players. I don't mean that as a slight to Mobley. He's amazing. Like, he's the best defensive rookie, bar none, stop the discussion. And his offensive game is solid, but like just never the stuff that's like, oh, wow. You know, he never has a game like Scottie, or very rarely at least has a game like Scottie Barnes just had. Like, even Cam Thomas, you know, you hear more about him than Evan Mobley these days because he scores a lot, even though Evan Mobley's way better. So I think Mobley should win. But I don't think it's crazy that, you know, Scottie Barnes gets up there, or even Cade. Cade's played pretty well, you know, the last couple months. Could sneak up in this discussion and get close to him. But I think Mobley's going to win. But, you know, clearly when Scottie Barnes is given the reins, he can lead this discussion.
Yeah, no OG and N would be either for Toronto. And Pascal Siakam struggling for the floor, 2 of 14 for just 8 points on the night. And yet you go to your rookie and he can lead the way. That's pretty impressive. I mean, very few players capable of doing that, you know, as young as he is and being able to just step in there. Look, this is a Nets team that's obviously not at full strength, pretty far from it. No Kyrie Irving, no Ben Simmons, who will be out for the rest of the week, and clearly no Kevin Durant as well. But still, a win's a win against any NBA team, and this is an impressive one. The Eastern Conference, man, what a slow it's going to be. It's unbelievable to see. Look, you're looking at the Heat. We just talked about them. You look at the Bulls, who are still a very good team, obviously. Philadelphia has been dominating of late. Boston, who I feel is kind of slowly creeping up and on people's radar now, perhaps for the first time all season. And you look at the Nets. I mean, we were having this discussion before we started recording. Do you have concerns about the Nets? Because I feel like most of us are kind of leaning towards, well, you know, once they get Kevin Durant back, once they get Ben Simmons back, they'll be at a pretty high level. And Kurt Irving, if, you know, we're starting to understand these reports that may or may not be able to grant some more flexibility regarding vaccine mandates, and that he might be eventually able to play at home and things of that sort. Can the Nets right the ship? Because obviously they've been struggling of late with, you know, their trio of stars mostly out of the lineup. But once they come back, do they have a legitimate chance of continuing to prove themselves as a title contender this season? Because right now they're eighth in the Eastern Conference. They're 32-30. They've got 3-7 over the last 10 games. Not great. What do you think, Tony? Do you think they can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals based on what they have so far this season?
I say yes, because Kevin Durant is on their team. You know, even go back to last year, like no Harden, or like the ghost of Harden, I suppose. Again, that series against the Bucks, and no Kyrie for much of it. And they still were, you know, I know it's a meme at this point, but a shoe on the line, a big shoe away from winning that. Like, Kevin Durant is that good. Like, he can get them pretty far by himself. Simmons, I think, will eventually play for them. It sounds like Kyrie could potentially be playing more. And even if he doesn't get hurt, they have Kyrie for at least 3 out of 7 games every series they play. You know what's weird about the Nets is, like, if they're the 8th seed, that's almost better for them, because then they get 4 games of Kyrie every series. But anyway, All this to say, yeah, I still believe they can be very good and make the conference finals. This year, the difference is, you know, last year they had the same team. I mean, they got Harden in, what, November, December? Mm-hmm. So they had mostly the same team for most of the season heading into the playoffs. When Simmons comes in, they'll have like a month to figure it out before those games. And that's where I think their weakness could come playoff time, is they're still honestly figuring out who they have and how it all fits together.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't think anybody's really talked about this. Like, you figure you can just add talent and immediately find a way to mesh, especially a more of a complementary player like Simmons at this point. He's not going to dominate offensively, obviously, or he'd still be a member of the Philadelphia 76ers. But, you know, defensively, he adds something there. Can he fit in? Can he find a way to mesh? Can he be effective when he doesn't have the ball in his hand? Like we haven't even seen much between KD and Kyrie. Like, the assumption is that they'll be able to find a way, but they haven't really played all that much, and they'll be tested in this Eastern Conference playoffs. That the race in the Eastern Conference is pretty deep, and you've got great teams, like I mentioned before, Boston, Cleveland, a lot of people not really even including them as far as legitimate contenders. But I mean, this 1-8 race is pretty impressive, and there's a lot of teams that could find a way to stand out.
Yeah, I do not envy anyone who has to play really anyone in the East. I mean, we haven't even talked about the Bucks, who just smacked another East contender tonight by 24. Like, Eastern Conference is really tough.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what's not tough? It's finding the right parts for your car or truck, because right now you could go to one of our sponsors, rockauto.com. It's just so easy to navigate their website. Look, you could go to a traditional chain storefront, see if the person behind the counter understands what you may or may not be looking for. They'll just look it up on their computers. If they can find anything, it'll be what their warehouse happens to carry. You go through these, you know, interminable line of questioning. You feel embarrassed. You're not feel comfortable. Why go through all that? You have access to computers at home or in your pocket, which means you've got access to rockauto.com. You can find all the parts you're looking for with just a few easy clicks. So easy to find, so easy to navigate. A family-owned business that's been in service for 20-plus years. That's 2 decades of helping auto parts customers like me. I went onto their website, found a taillight for my wife's car, was able to replace it like that, saved hundreds of dollars, tons of time, and I felt good about myself afterwards. And you will too. You can save money, save time. Who doesn't want to do that? Go to rockauto.com right now. Go to the section that says, "How did you hear about us?" and write the phrase "Locked On" so they know we sent you. Find all the parts that you're looking for your car or truck. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That is rockauto.com.
Before the break, David, let's talk about those defending champs. But everybody, thank you for making us your first listen every single day here at Locked On NBA. For your second listen, why not check out one of me or David again at Locked On Heat or Locked On Pacers, who both played fun and interesting games last night. But let's talk about the champs who smoked the Hornets. The Hornets, who I can never take seriously for some reason. The poor Hornets, it's not their fault. I just can't. Bucks destroy them. Giannis, ridiculous. Every time you see a stat line, you don't even blink anymore because he's Giannis. But 26, 16, and 6, ho-hum, no big deal. Bobby Portis gives him 20 and 10, 21 from Drew Holiday, who was a plus 30. Look, I feel for the Hornets, because if the Hornets make the playoffs, they might have to play the Bucks, and they will get waxed in that series. The Hornets might have to play the Heat, they will get waxed in that series. But the Bucks, you know, there's a lot of questions about the Bucks. Should we be worried about the Bucks? And then I see games like this, and I say, no, we should not be worried about the Bucks. How do you feel about this?
I have concerns, and also, like you, I feel like they're very, very good. They need the right matchup here, because I think they are missing something, or will be missing something, in terms of, you know, Brook Lopez and not having the kind of size that they're used to, or was a big part of their success. But Bobby Portis adds something offensively that Lopez did not, but defensively he gives up something, although I guess you're making up for that by having Antetokounmpo at the five, so maybe that allays all your fears. At the same time, you look at the opponent, Hornets, as you said, not a team that has been legitimately consistent or solid all season long. Like, they've gotten big performances. They've got an all-star in LaMelo Ball, etc. That's fine. They're a fun team. They've always been a fun team, or they have been in recent history. That's not necessarily good enough to assure yourself of a playoff spot or any kind of consistent winning again. So, like, the Hornets, just they're not a team that are particularly scary, as much as their offense might be able to crank out on any given night. they're not really going to threaten the top teams in the East or West. And I think Milwaukee still absolutely belongs in a conversation. I know some people kind of just ignored them because they, you know, they've ignored them years before they won the title. They've ignored them now that they actually have won the title. Oh, that they got lucky, that they were able to take advantage of injuries, et cetera. You know what? Every team does that. Milwaukee was no different, and they've still managed to dominate for most of the last few regular seasons, something that people conveniently forget. I think the Bucks are a very, very good team. Are they weaker now than they were last season? Yeah, I think that's fair. But they were also very, very good last year, too. So if they're a step below that, they're still a legitimate contender. But that's part of what we've been talking about all show long, is that there's incredible parity in the Eastern Conference between teams like East, like Miami, Philadelphia, et cetera. Any one of these teams could represent the Eastern Conference, and I wouldn't be in the least bit surprised. I think right now we're looking at Phoenix or Golden State likely emerging out of the West. I don't know if the East can match up with them sufficiently well. It just, a lot of it depends on what we see throughout the playoffs in terms of health and whether or not a team finds a way to, you know, maybe click and find some new dimension to their offense. But look, Milwaukee's got the experience. They've got the talent. They've got enough depth there. If they can stay healthy, if they can keep their big three going, and if they can get kind of performances from Portis like they did tonight, I don't have any concerns. I'm not too worried about it.
I agree with basically every single thing you just said. It's similar to how I feel about Durant with the Nets. If Giannis is playing for them, I favor them against almost anybody in this conference. The Hornets look, for my money, maybe the best ticket in the NBA. Super fun to watch. A lot of fun players. They've also won 2 of their last 10 games and are now 10th in the West, or the East, excuse me, as they try to sneak into that play-in. Probably going to be okay because the Wizards aren't looking too good, but Hornets got to figure something out this season. Markelle Fultz is back. David Ramel. It was very fun to watch him on my Pacers Magic spree. That game was gross. The Pacers played one of the worst games they've played offensively this season, especially since the trade deadline when they acquired Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield, who both played pretty solid games for the Pacers. But the fun part of this game was Fultz. There was a time he was at the scorer's table ready to check in for the Magic, and Rick Carlisle took a timeout. And Jamal Mosley said, no, I don't want him to check in during a timeout. So they kept him out of the game and then took an intentional take foul on the first possession back in at the timeout just so that the crowd could cheer when he subbed in. I thought that was a really cool moment from Orlando to do that, actually. And then he just ho-hum, shoots 5 of 7 and has 10 and 6, and they win his 16 minutes on a limit. So very cool to see Markelle Fultz back. The Magic season is completely sunken, so getting anything from him the rest of the season, seeing what he can be next year, is good for them. And he looked pretty solid in this game. He adds a dimension they don't have in the guard rotation. I don't know how much the Magic really care about, again, getting wins this season outside of games like this where it's a feel-good story, but they looked pretty good. They smoked the Pacers. They were getting in the lane and playing good defense. So, you know, I don't know what to make of the Magic, but it is very fun to see Markelle Fultz back and playing again.
Yes, to that point, I think that's what we should focus on. This is a kid still, like, very, very young, who's gone through a hell of a lot over the first few seasons of his career. Like, these are the kind of conversations normally had about, like, bigs, you know, like Sam Bowie, Greg Oden, and things of that sort, where you kind of look at a player who's been, you know, diminished by injury. But a player like Fultz, who was, you know, the top pick of the draft, and all the criticism he had for his shot and the shoulder injury and the confidence and everything else, and, you know, just questioning whether or not he was an NBA level player, and then started to show incredible promise with Orlando before an injury took him out, an injury that's kept him out for the last 16 months. For him to be able to show just anything tonight is a victory for him and for Magic fans. Having said that, I'm already seeing people criticize or question what his fit with his team is in the long term, that, you know, now they've got Cole Anthony there. Are they going to be able to keep him on this roster? Is he still a big part of what they're looking to do moving forward? Is he just going to be a rotation guy, as you said? I don't know. Those are tough questions, and I don't know that anybody has the answers for that, because Orlando has been a team that's been very, very difficult to predict or see regarding what their future is. They're clearly leaning into a full rebuild after years of kind of semi-rebuilding and semi-kind of competing and semi-just trying to do something and not really succeeding at it. But my question is for you, Tony, because if anybody's listened to this show pretty regularly, I've been somewhat, not necessarily critical of Indiana, but it feels like Matt and I have kind of historically had just a Pacers game every Monday night, and this is a team that's been so difficult to watch all season long. I'm sure that's not something I have to tell you about, but what's the plan here for the Pacers over the next 20 games of the season? What are they looking for to accomplish? Like, the playoffs are clearly out of the picture. What is it that you're just looking to find out of this Pacers team moving forward?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is evaluating pairs and lineups, right? Like Malcolm Brogdon returned this past weekend. Before this weekend, had played three games in about 2 months. You know, a lot of the last 20 games is, okay, how does Malcolm Brogdon fit with Tyrese Haliburton? Because Kevin Pritchard and Rick Carlisle want the Pacers to try to be good again next year, right? So maybe that fits great and they can keep Brogdon into next year. Maybe Miles Turner returns in a week and they know, oh, wow, Miles Turner is exactly what this team needs defensively. Or maybe they realize he's not and they move on from him. You know, a lot of it is evaluating how some of the vets fit with the core that they have now. But also a lot of it is, hey, how many minutes can we possibly play Isaiah Jackson, Chris Duarte, and Tyrese Haliburton at the same time? How much of this core can we evaluate in such a short time and figure out what their needs are? Because those are the guys who are going to be around for a long time in Indiana now. So for the Pacers, it's about, you know, mix and matching lineups, but really evaluating what works and what doesn't so they can know what they need to build in the next step. Because 20 games is really not that big of a sample to try to evaluate a young core combining with a veteran core that's already in place. So they're going to have some ugly games like this where sometimes the new pieces don't click, and they're going to have some games like Sunday night against the Celtics where they route an Eastern Conference contender by 20 at home. So I don't know what to expect from them going forward, but a lot of evaluation and a lot of varying results.
Speaking of varying results, maybe we should wrap up our show with the last game of the night, the Sacramento Kings and the Oklahoma City Thunder.
The opposite side of the Pacers. Yeah, they have all their other pieces. Yeah, the Kings could do anything any night, right, at this point of the season. I just never know what they're going to do. Hey, they did what they're supposed to. They won against the Thunder, who just beat the Pacers, ironically. And Shea was awesome, and the rest of the Thunder were not. And that's kind of how you beat the Thunder, is no one else has a good game except for Shea Gildas-Alexander. On the Kings side, Trey Lyles first started the four. I know this sounds stupid. You got to bear with me here. They've been searching for an answer at that position for forever. Chimezie Metu started there for a while. They tried two bigs. They're doing new stuff next to Sabonis. They're trying new starting fives. And Trey Lyles, 24 points in his first game as a starter for the Kings. Maybe they found something in their chase for the plan, although the Pelicans continue to look good. So the Kings have rebuilt their team on the fly at the deadline in a way that makes them better. Is it good enough to make the play-in? I'll be interested to see, but maybe they found some sort of link here with Lyles in the starting five because Fox looked great in this game. Harrison Barnes looked great in this game. But as I say with the Kings, as always, nah, it's not going to work out.
Yeah, it's funny to me. Like, I guess I don't do enough standings watch as I should, because looking at this Kings team that's like fighting and making this big trade to acquire Sabonis, et cetera, and still fighting for the playoffs, and they've got exactly four more wins than an Oklahoma City team that's absolutely trying to tank the season. Yet somehow Sacramento just keeps stumbling into losses because, well, they got a Kings, right? That's the way they do things. I don't know. I didn't catch any of this game, as you well know. And look, it's not exactly like the most thrilling game, but, you know, the Kings found a way to win, and you got a good performance from Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. That's pretty much all you can expect out of a team like this. And we'll see what happens with this Kings team, but I am not expecting much like you. I don't think that they'll be able to find a way to turn it around. I don't know that Trey Lyles is the solution to anything, unfortunately. So
I want to feed Sacramento fans some optimism. They haven't played an important game for 16 years. They need something fun to latch onto, don't they?
Is this it? Like, this is the one? It's like, oh, we found a way to beat the team. Like, before this game, they had three more wins than the Oklahoma City Thunder. They beat the Thunder. They got four more wins. Woo! All right, let's do it.
Hey, again, they have not played an important game in 16 years. Let them have their one night of hope that Trey Lyles was the linking piece after the Sabonis trade. But to be fair, they smoked the Thunder. They did not just win. They played very well. They shut down everybody but Shea. I feel bad ending on that note for the poor Kings.
I've been negative all night long. Why not? Just blame me. It's all my fault.
David, where can people follow you and all your work?
They can follow me at DRamil13. I occasionally write for Forbes as well. But, of course, you can follow me and my coverage of the Miami Heat over at Locked On Heat.
And I'm at TEastNBA on Twitter, covering the Pacers over at Locked On Pacers. You can hear me try to figure out what they're doing for these last 19 games as they stumble through this season. You've been Locked On NBA, and we will see you tomorrow.